Go ahead and start this call to order, the first monthly business meeting at the Fort Worth Townsend for Wednesday, August the 8th. We'll stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. So, we have one thing I wanted to add to the agenda. We have A is the leasing policy, B is a letter with withdrawal, and C, we have a letter from Friday Harbor requesting assistance in joining them on a request for helping the killer whales. I'll read that when we come to it, but I like that. That is item C on regular business. Is there any other additions or amendments to the agenda? Are you aware of this, Pete?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, do I have a motion to approve that agenda?
I so move.
I second. All in favor?
Aye.
The agenda is approved as amended. Public comments, not relate, well, public comments, period. Any public comments? Liz?
Should I sit here, or how would you like to?
Just as long as we can hear you. I think standing up would be useful.
Okay.
At the rostrum?
Well, I could at least then rest my, rest my paperwork.
I mean, if they're having to stand.
My paperwork, exactly. My paperwork here.
Yeah, we got all windows open, fans on, and an old man hearing up here, so.
So I'm going to, I'll distribute. I've got five copies here with color. So at least, I like the commissioners to have at least three of those, and then.
At least the color ones?
The color ones are the first one, and then I've got a few more here. Copy of a letter.
Sorry.
And then I'll pass the rest of these out to others for kids.
Here's color.
So good afternoon. My name is Liz.
Thanks.
I'm Nesky. Appreciate the opportunity to talk with you this morning. This afternoon. In the next several months, you'll be developing a 2019 budget and capital facilities proposal for public review and commissioner approval. Last year, as part of the budget process, my husband Charlie and I presented a financial freedom plan for the Port of Fort Townsend that was broadly supported by the community. The plan was offered in a spirit of community collaboration with the goal of financial stability for the port and avoiding bankruptcy. There are some disappointing trends that continue. Spending down cash reserves, not significantly reducing expenses, deferring maintenance to balance budgets, and not generating needed cash by selling assets or negotiating market-based leases. So here are recommendations for 2019. Give your budget development team policy guidance now as they develop the 2019 budget. Tell your staff what your mission-critical priorities are for 2019, make a list in public, communicate your priorities to them, and then to Jefferson County residents. On the income side, provide a realistic update on bonding and financing capacity. Develop a clear work plan for 2019 based on your guided mission critical priorities and include a conservative five-year cash flow revenue projections, including rate proposals. On the expenses side, hold your expenses to 2017 levels. Reorganize and reduce personnel for efficiency and to avoid bankruptcy. Focus exclusively on commissioner guided mission critical priorities following the adopted strategic plan. We're pleased to see the ad hoc task force is going to be reviewing lease policies before you hold a public hearing for broader public review. Please guide the task force to apply a triple bottom line to your lease policy language. What I've done here is attached in the color copy a analysis of policies that we used at the City of Olympia when I was there that looks at triple bottom line. So I offer that as a tool that you might use for the task force. We understand that the Point Hudson development planning effort will be moving forward again, and we would like to suggest that the Northwest Maritime Center lease proposal be included in the next two phases of that work as a formal alternative. The consultants' next steps from their timeline include evaluation of potential use alternatives, identification of a preferred alternative, and implementation strategy, all with ongoing community involvement. So let's use consistent actual numbers for comparison of the alternatives and see how the Northwest Maritime Center lease proposal compares with other alternatives. We appreciate the opportunity to comment and look forward to continued involvement. Thank you.
Thank you.
Liz, Art, is it your impression that we're about to get another proposal from the Northwest Maritime Center?
No.
They've withdrawn the one that they proposed.
As I understood, they withdrew from direct one-on-one negotiations. What I'm proposing, or what we're proposing, is that you have a proposal that has numbers, that has a very detailed description of what they're proposing, and your consultant is going to need to come up with specific alternatives that are evaluated and compared, and the community is going to have to take a look at those, as are the commissions. And we're suggesting you take the Point Hudson proposal the Maritime Center presented you, and you include that in your alternatives discussion. And you include that in community engagement so that the community members can look at the Maritime Center proposal and compare it to the other proposals that your consultant's going to be coming up with. And it wouldn't take much to do that because there's a relatively detailed proposal the Maritime Center provided you with numbers. So it really would be an issue of getting comparable numbers between Maritime Center proposals and the other proposals.
So you're just saying use the Maritime proposal
as an alternative.
As a benchmark.
As an alternative. And then decide how you want to compare those.
Okay.
How you're going to evaluate them. Consultants are going to need to do that anyway. They're going to have to figure out a way they're going to compare the alternatives for Point Hudson development. That's going to be something they're going to have to figure out.
Okay, thank you.
So.
Thanks, Liz. Any other comments?
Okay, let's see, Chris, go that way.
So I want to thank you guys for considering a lease policy advisory committee. I hope that the marine trades will have adequate representation on the committee. Ernie Baird and David King have expressed a willingness to serve on that committee, and I would ask you to consider appointing both of them to the committee. It seems like this might require a modification of the committee composition proposed by staff. I don't think David King falls into any of those five categories.
Can you speak up a little bit more?
This might require a modification of the committee composition that's proposed in the agenda, because I don't think David King falls into any of those five categories that are described. I'm concerned that two meetings may not be adequate to resolve all the issues related to writing a lease policy. I appreciate the desire to speed the process along efficiently, but suggest that the commission and the committee reserve the flexibility to extend the time limit if required. No new lease policy document would be better than a hurried, ill-considered one.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ma'am, did you have your hand up?
No, but I want to speak, so.
Oh, I thought you said your hand up.
No,
okay, go ahead.
I'll go next.
Go ahead.
My mind. Okay, I wanted to say that I'm Pam Petronic, and I think that this creating this lease policy that holds the port's mission statement and strategic plan up can be an opportunity for the port to take a leading role in maintaining and promoting marine trades jobs that we know benefit the entire county. I think we need to take the time, whatever time that we need to create relationships and involving the public in that planning process. Like Chris said, if we take the time now, it will save us a lot of time and frustration later. We have to go slow now to make it work easy and fast later. The lease policy process outlined with those two meetings and five people is not adequate, and it deserves a more thorough process. I want to recommend abandoning the current draft and abandoning the highest and best use language. The highest and best use language is seriously at odds with the triple bottom line appraisal of value adopted in the port's mission statement and strategic plan. Well, mainly the strategic plan. And I would advise a clear lease policy and that the commissioners set the culture and the tone and get the results. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Do you have that in writing? Or did you?
Yes, I'll send it to you.
Great,
in
thank
writing.
You. Bertram?
Bertram Levy. After listening to the financial love fest at the last meeting over the news of the $325,000 net income, I went home and dug into the figures. The majority of the net income did not come from the celebrated market success, but rather from higher rates. Specifically, the marina RV contributed 52% and the yard operations 38% of the total net increase. Comparing cumulative June 2017 to 2018 is a bit misleading because, as I recall, the last year's 10 to 15% mortgage increase did not begin on the January, but I think it began in May. But when combined with the 2018 CPI plus one, or 4%, the mortgage tenants are now paying between 14 and 19% more in 2018 than in the beginning of 2017. Now the revenue, RV revenue, is certainly robust, and I think it would be most useful to separate that figure out in the financial report from the mortgage. However, ramp activity, property lease, and fuel sales were all down. As far as the yard income, the increase needs to be treated with a cautionary note. The 2015 haul-out figures show that there was a dip in 2016 and 17, and then it's a recovery in 2018. Now, as you know, many people are using three-year bottom paint, and we could be seeing a bumper crop year. TJ and I have had a cursory look at some of the haul-out data, which, though not complete, does suggest that there is a cyclical nature to this. And we are going to compile the data and offer some suggestions to the commission on ways that we might encourage a more frequent haul-out schedules. The $62,000 balance of the income comes primarily from a decrease in the contract services. It makes me think how much better the net income would be with some administrative birth control. Now, I know you commissioners have a lot on your plate, but someone needs to be able to give you accurate financial analysis. And I would offer that opening up a public comment period after the financial report could be helpful. Finally, as we enter the last half of the budget process, I only wish that one commissioner would stand up and ask how much was spent on all the projects that never went forward last year and tabulate that. In particular, the bathroom renovation, staff time, community open house, IDD retreats, parametric, stormwater engineering, Port Hudson CERB study and surveys, Maritime Center negotiation and legal and consultant fees, and the jetty. By learning from this process, one would hope that the commission, would exercise a more cautious approach and involvement in any new projects. I feel that this would have a greater impact on the port's net income than the unrealistic rate increases and the predatory CPA plus one proposal.
Thank you, Bert.
Thank you, Bert.
Melinda?
Melinda, right. After all that, I don't even know where to start. Good Lord. One, I think the idea of having an open session after the financial report is a bit silly, seeing how there are very few people in this room that actually understand the financials to start with, much less trying to distort them with their view of what they want them to say. But having said that, it keeps coming back to the fact that this staff, this team, is doing the job that they were hired to do. What I do hope the commissioners take or keep in mind is that to disrupt that in any way basically says that the inmates are running the asylum. I am deeply disturbed by the pressure and the dishonest tactics that the Maritime Trades have done, the Maritime Center, the use of their particular last proposal was utter nonsense, and I think you commissioners all realize that. That is not even a starting point. It's not a negotiating point. It was less than half of what they should be paying if they want to take over Point Hudson. I hope that, yes, that you get input from the public, but please get that input from the entire county, not just the Maritime Trades, not just the Maritime Center devotees. I'm finding this just absolutely horrendous. Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda. Troy, did you say?
Troy McKelvey, in regards to the letter from San Juan County that hasn't been read yet, I would like the commissioners not to sign any agreement unless it's coupled with any agreement to a cut in fisheries, recreational fisheries quotas, until it's coupled with a demand for a 100% increase in hatchery production at the same time. Just cutting the quotas, it's already been cut to the bone. We had a 10-day salmon season split in half, so no one could plan or anything. And in regards to the letter being sent to the PFMC, that is designed as a slow-moving process. The letter goes in 1 year, and then it's sent to a committee to be evaluated. And then the committee brings it back to the PFMC as a group. And if they want, it could take years for and a new idea to be presented and approved. Or it could be sped up with some unknown process that I don't know. I would suggest it could not only go to the PFMC, but to the legislature and to the governor and to our U.S. representatives as a package to feed the orcas.
Thank you, Troy. There'll be more explanation coming up about that when we actually get to
Troy. So my reading of the way allocations are done is that they determine some amount salmon for the orcas to have an adequate diet, and then they allocated by percentage all these other uses, and I wonder if they're changing those percentages. Are they watching the proposal to watch the spawning and the fish hatchery? The spawning and the fish hatchery reproduction of, because my concern, I guess, would be that the orcas are going to eat what the orcas eat if it's available, but we need to watch out for the entire fishery. And you know, if we're reducing all these things, are we still watching out for the spawning salmon and for the hatchery production as well in these proposals?
I didn't read anything in the proposal about increase in hatchery production or anything besides cutting what's already been cut to the bone. Commercials and the tribes and the recreationals have been cut year after year after year with no increase in hatchery production.
So I think what we should probably do, I should have let you know I was going to call on you during this discussion. Oh. I mean, and so Troy rightfully stood up now to give a comment because this is the time to comment on agenda items, but what I didn't tell him is he's an expert on this. He's actually on the Salmon Advisory Committee for hatcheries and so forth. So when we get to letters at regular business item C, we'll have a more rigorous discussion on this. So before we, thank you, Troy, we'll go then. So are there any other public comments? Okay. So the consent agenda didn't have any public comments. Do I have enough?
I make a motion we approve the consent agenda.
I second it.
All in favor? Aye. The consent agenda is approved. No second reading, no first reading, and so regular business. Leasing Policy Advisory Committee process. Take it away, Eric. I assume it's Eric?
Yes.
Or is it Sam?
It's Eric.
Oh, it's me. Okay. So pretty straightforward agenda item. And we discussed this at your last meeting on the 25th, the formation of a committee to provide counsel to you on the staff draft final staff draft of the leasing policy. And what is before you is essentially a recommendation on the both the charge of that committee and the composition and time frame for the committee completing its work. And what is suggested by staff is a 5-member committee, two members representing current court tenants, one tenant from within District 1, another tenant from either Districts 2 or 3. Another group to be represented would be private sector, commercial and industrial tenants. That would be one person on the committee. Another private sector landlord, again, unaffiliated with the court, and one committee member. And then one representative of a local financial or lending institution, familiar both with financing of small business locally and also, for instance, lease assignments, that type of thing. So the reason for the committee being as small as it is because we understand the commission's desire to make progress with all deliberate speed here and to try to get a report out to you as soon as we can. The smaller the committee, frankly, the easier it makes it to schedule meetings and have full attendance. Obviously, reasonable minds can differ, and if you wish to take more time or alter the composition, obviously, that's clearly a commission prerogative. The method of appointment that is proposed here is that we would have posted on the court's website a form, essentially an application, expressing interest, the area that each individual proposes to represent, and essentially their background and experience, how they would be able to contribute to the work of the committee. That application could be posted online as soon as tomorrow. We would seek to have the application period close pretty rapidly, as soon as the close of business on the 15th of August. Then we would bring those forward to you, all of the applications, to your next meeting on August 22nd, for you to review those names in nomination and to vote on the final composition and membership of the committee. I think the hope is that we could do this in two meetings. I think there are, there's a different point of view between, I think, members of the public and perhaps some members of staff on what is required to get this, to receive comments that are sufficiently detailed to provide meaningful advice and counsel to the commission in its deliberations. I think our hope was that we would have a report from the committee prepared and ready to submit to the commission as early as Wednesday, September 12th. And then obviously the commission's deliberations on the policy would occur thereafter. So that's really just a deadline for presenting the committee report to the commission, not in any way a deadline for the commission's final action on the policy. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or address any concerns you might have.
I wasn't on the commission when the PSAC committee was formed. I remember it being formed. Was that done by the commission? Did they pick the members of the PSAC?
The commission did pick, ratified the membership, I think by voice vote in open session.
Okay.
Like the names were suggested by staff at that time to try to, and I think the staff at the time worked with the commission chair, if I remember correctly, to identify names to place in nomination. I could be mistaken on that, but that's my recollection.
So I see the composition here with respect to the public, the public aspect from the court side, who would be attending these commission meetings. I don't see anything here for that.
I'm sorry if I misunderstood the question. Are you suggesting a category just for at large?
No, I'm saying from the court side.
From staff. I think what's envisioned right now is that it would both be court legal counsel and myself, Mr. Schmelick and I, staffing those committee meetings.
Is there a substantive objection to adding a commissioner to that committee makeup?
I'll give you non-legal advice.
Sure.
It's probably not a good idea because you want all the commissioners to receive the same amount of information. The other thing you want to be clear on these committees, and I've done a number of them around the state, is that they report. The report is not a vote consensus, we all agree. It's the staff tries to reflect in a report what all the thoughts were. A lot of them are going to be kind of common. There may be some other thoughts that are like one holdout says, I think this or that, and we want to report all that to you. Our goal would be to get a policy that the committee generally supports. So having said that, that's not legal advice. One of you certainly could be a member.
So my thoughts on this is I specifically like the committee composition exactly the way it is. I do think that, like Chris was suggesting, that two meetings may or may not be sufficient. But prefacing that with the fact that they're going to come into these meetings with a substantial amount of work already been done by legal counsel and Eric, right? You guys have been working on boilerplate leases and doing a lot of work on these things. So it's not like they're going to be starting from scratch. So they're going to be going over things that have already been prepared based on comments we've heard so far from the commission. So I think two meetings is ideal, but I don't think that we really need to say two meetings when you're done, two meetings when we're pulling the rug out from under you. I would think that a third meeting could be advisable if it was absolutely necessary. But I'd kind of like to suggest is that we're going to have some groundwork laid for this to happen, right?
Correct. We're working on, I wouldn't say boilerplate, I would say standard leases that are used probably north of 600 tenants for various ports around the state. There are a number of them. Some, as Greg and I have talked, and Eric, there's some differences for airports and marine properties and DNR property, so there is some variation month to month in the species, but generally speaking, there are leases that have been used a lot, so they are fairly standard. The leasing policy is separate, and then I would encourage the commission to reserve for yourself the lease rates. That's really a commission function.
So just as a point of clarification, and correct me if I'm wrong, Frank, but I think what we envisage is really the policy. The draft policy going before the committee, not the lease templates.
Yeah, and the draft policy may inform a lease template if you adopt a policy
seeking to avoid numbers
right.
in the lease policy as well.
We just add, and it's, if you look on page 7 of our report, it's the second of this, but the words, it's the third bullet under specific committee responsibilities, is to formulate an advisory report to the commission. And, you know, it's important that everybody remembers we set lease policy here at the commission level. So what you're giving us is an advisory of what you think we should be doing. We can take it or we can not take it, but we can look at it. And I think my thought on Chris's comment as far as the two committee meetings, you know, see how it goes. I would think in two meetings you could pretty much get the concerns of the public into a draft report pretty carefully. I don't see why we would need much more than that.
Yeah,
and I would like to see it move along fairly.
I think our hope is that at the first meeting, you know, there would be a staff and legal counsel presentation, sort of a walkthrough of the draft, explaining the draft, highlighting the concerns raised previously by members of the public and the commission with the draft and the extent to which those have or have not been addressed in the draft that's placed before the committee. Right.
And our job is not to try and steer a particular policy, it's to make sure that in that process the commission is fully informed of what this committee's views of it are.
So is the September 12th date, that's a date to report on the activities of the committee, not a date to propose a lease policy?
That is suggested as a date to report out the concerns and issues and comments of the committee to the commission.
Okay, and then subsequent to that, there'll be a proposed lease policy for ratification.
Well, presumably, thereafter, there would be one or more additional commission workshops to review and consider the report and to direct changes for public hearing draft that would go forward later in the autumn.
Okay, so the recommendation is to authorize staff to proceed to pose the invitation to serve on Port Leasing Policy Advisory Committee shown in attachment A, and to return to the commission with applications submitted by interested community members for review, nomination, and formal appointment during the August 22nd regular meeting. We all agree that that should be
yes.
authorized.
Do you need that in resolution?
Do you need a resolution or just a motion?
Can I
need
a motion to call for? So, under, you know,
under what? I didn't hear you, Bill.
I'm just before we go to before we go to before we go to directing staff on this. Under this makeup, is there not some category that David Kane could serve under?
Well, you'll recall, I just specifically said I really like this makeup, and I wanted to clarify the fact that I like it because I don't want to be any, oh, let's see if we can't squeeze in a ringer for somebody else.
So I understand what you said. I got that. My question is, if staff wanted to do that, and I'm not telling staff what to do.
Well, again, I think it will be up to applicants who go online and complete the right now, I'll tell you, I think I know what David's resume looks like. I'm not entirely certain. It's pretty broad. Maybe he falls within one of these categories, and I'm not aware of it. I will say that we're going to bring forward all the applications that we receive to the commission for your review
I'm not asking you to do or not do anything. I'm just asking to clarify for me if that's.
I don't know that he falls within any of these categories.
So we need a resolution on this?
Make a motion that we proceed with telling staff to move forward on this as it is.
I'll second that motion.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Next item is on this thing over here. Letter of withdrawal of the city zoning code text amendment.
Yes.
This is again Mr. Hayes.
So you will recall that the staff came before you, I think in January of this year, requesting permission to submit an application that would seek changes in Chapter 1722 of the Port Townsend Municipal Code to allow both open storage as well as recreational vehicle use, RV park use, in that portion of the port's Point Hudson facility that lies upland and outside of the shoreline management jurisdiction. That application was submitted to the city on February 1. I think the commission will well remember a lot of the critical comment that was received in the wake of that decision, and I think concerns expressed that there might be a better avenue and a better process by which the court's proposal or concerns might be aired and addressed other than a discrete text amendment as part of the city's annual code amendment process. So what we've heard back informally is that this has not been well received and that the chances of legislative approval by the city are not great, and that we would be well advised to participate fully in the city's shoreline master program update which by statute must be completed by June 30, 2020, but we're advised by city staff will be done sooner than that, as the means to more fully express the port's concerns and formulate in collaboration with city staff an amendment package that that hopefully the city and the Department of Ecology could both support with respect to One Hudson. So what's proposed is withdrawal of our text amendment and full participation in the city's upcoming shoreline master program update process.
So you had informal comments back from city staff that they didn't care for our request. Have you had any informal comments back from city staff that if you withdraw it, that they will be more cooperative?
We did not hear direct, I did not hear direct opposition from any member of staff. What they advised was that this was not well received, and this was going to be, these words were not used, but, you know, a Sisyphean task. And that we would be advised of Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill.
Okay, hold back now.
And that we would be well advised to seek to work more collaboratively. The process for the formal text amendments is really quite, while there are a lot of meetings that occur, it's not one that necessarily is designed to allow working in collaboration with staff to formulate a legislative proposal that the parties are agreed upon. And I think what we're hoping for here is that we can work with city staff to identify some amendments that are more likely to receive community and council support and that will help the port improve the bottom line at Point Hudson. But it's, again, there are no certainties. It's a legislative process, and they have ultimate land use and shoreline use authority. The port does not.
I just, I'm happy to do whatever it takes to have a better relationship with the city. I'd be even happier if the city was of the same mind.
So,
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. So, we had a resolution that we submit that letter.
Just merely a motion and vote is sufficient.
Yeah. I move we submit that letter.
I'll second it.
Okay. Aye. Done. Okay, the last item of business on here is a letter from Friday Harbor. I'm going to go over it quickly.
I probably have a fairly lengthy comment on here.
Okay.
But I'd like to
go ahead and read the letter first.
Yeah.
I got to find it. Here we go. Dear Directors, that's us. The Port of Friday Harbor Commission is considering a resolution to advocate for a fixed allocation of Chinook salmon, separate from a general ocean escapement, to be set aside for the endangered southern resident orca whales. Aside from the moral imperative to take immediate actions to protect our resident whales, the Port of Friday Harbor recognizes the substantial regional economic impact the resident whales have on our local economies. The following is the text of the resolution being considered by the Port of Friday Harbor. And here's their text. The Port of Friday Harbor respectfully requests that the Pacific Fishery Management Council set aside an allocation of 250,000 Chinook salmon from the Fraser River for the endangered southern resident killer whales. Whale population is declining and behaviors are changing due to the shortage of available salmon. Based on estimates of food requirements, healthy orca needs 18 to 25 adult salmon daily to meet their energy requirements. If the 75 living southern resident killer whales feed for 100 days in local waters, that means that based on 20 salmon per day, at least 150,000 Chinook are needed just to maintain the status quo. If the orca remain longer, as they have in many years, their numbers increase, more fish would be needed. Currently, the council allocates salmon for spawning, tribal catch, commercial catch, and sport catch. The fish that the whales need are hidden in what's called ocean loss. Because ocean loss is a percentage of the total run, it fluctuates with run size. However,
whales need a fixed number of salmon every season. The net result of this in low years, in years of low return, the killer whales have to compete even harder with other user groups in spawning and escapement, and spawning escapement may suffer. The health and presence of the southern resident killer whale is vitally important to the economy of the port of Friday Harbor in San Juan County. Dozens of whale watch boats employing hundreds of people contribute to the local economy and pump revenue into the state via licensing and sales tax. In 2017, 37,000 discrete sales were recorded from boats based in the port, and 36,000 sales were recorded from the Victoria Clipper. This does not include whale and wildlife watching kayaks, other harbors on San Juan, and other harbors on San Juan Island. Multiply this by the many other marine centers around the Salish Sea, and this adjustment to allocation is easily justified by economics alone. But beyond that, their endangered status, their iconic presence in the Pacific Northwest, and just because it's the right thing to do, the orca should be given a seat at the table. The allocation for them should be prioritized right behind spawning escapement, but ahead of all other user groups. Unlike other enhancement schemes, this would have an immediate effect and be without much direct cost due to infrastructure construction. On behalf of the residents of the San Juan Island and the residents of swimming waters, thank you. So that's the proposal that we've been asked to sign on with. I have some comments, but I'll let you've got some comments too, so go ahead.
Let me just, I'll just start. And I want to do a whale 101. There are some interesting numbers. So the Southern Resident Killer Whales, SRKW, represents 75 orcas, as this letter states. We actually watch 140 other orcas regularly in the area that are transient orcas. And actually their presence in the Salish Sea from Olympia to Vancouver and out to the ocean is much more prevalent than the SRKW. This year alone, the orcas, the SRKW orcas, Southern Resident Killer Whale orcas, have been in the area about 30 days, okay, so not 100 days. And they're actually spending a lot more time at Tofino on the ocean. The salmon are bigger, more plentiful. And it isn't just, what you need to keep in mind, it's not just 20 salmon per day, or it's the size of the salmon. If you watch a mother orca push a salmon around to her feeding calf or her teenager whale, it takes, you know, maybe 10 minutes of fiddling with this salmon to push it into a position where they actually grab it and bite it and eat it. And it's a lot of energy expended, and so it needs big fish in order to get a big bonus for what they're doing. And so my take on that, and this is my personal opinion, that's why they're spending a lot of time out on the ocean, because the fish are bigger out there than they are in here. So it isn't just increasing the number of salmon, it's increasing the size of salmon that we really have to think about with this. So I'm all for this. I think Troy. I think what Troy said is absolutely imperative, that adding at this point in time, I mean, that there's this big debate about what's native, what's hatchery, what are we doing here? I mean, turn the hatcheries on, go full bore, put a lot of fish in the water. Why not? It's not going to hurt anything. And I think to kind of say, oh, we're just going to try and keep this native thing going and pull back on it is really short-sighted. And there's a lot of science out there that questions whether the SRKWs will survive at any rate. The amount of, it's ironic that they mention the Fraser River in here, because the Fraser River is one of the most polluted rivers in the Northwest. And so all the salmon coming out of the Fraser River are actually quite high in PCBs and contribute a lot of damage to the SRKW. So just saying, well, we want to get more fish out of the Fraser River, that doesn't really solve the problem either, because they have to clean up the Fraser River, the city of Vancouver, and they're not really inclined to do that at any time in the near future. No one's talking to them about that. And so I'm fine with the letter. I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying it would be nice to say, Canada, clean up your river so we can get better fish and turn up the hatcheries, exactly like Troy said, 100%, if you're going to do an allocation.
Well, I'm really glad for your comments, because, like I said, I have some too, and they were pretty much aligned with what you said.
Can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
There are, beyond the transient orcas that we watch, there's humpbacks, minkies, gray whales, and fin whales. And we've looked recently at the amount of days that we've actually watched a southern resident killer whales. We're at around, I don't know, 350 to 400 departures this year for whale watching. And of that, we've watched killer whales 36 times this year. So, I mean, southern resident killer whales. We've seen lots of other whales. So our economy, in terms of Friday Harbor saying, oh, it's going to affect our economy, we're going to go down in the tubes, not really true, because if there's a lot of other animals that we're watching out there besides the SRKWs.
The Pacific Fishery Management Council, so that's like Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Native Fish Management, whatever the Canadian folks
not
are.
Right. That's Stephen Troy.
Yeah, that's kind of in my... Troy, go ahead. You know more about that than I do.
Pacific Fish Management Council, it starts with the Department of Commerce is there, the Department of State is there, the Coast Guard, NOAA, then representatives from Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and California. And commercial interests, they regulate all kinds of ground fish, tuna, salmon, any kind of commercial fish. It's quite an extensive room for people. So it takes a long time for a process to go through there. A lot of committee, each state has a committee, Habitat has a committee, Wheaton Fish, Forage Fish, everything has committees. Letter comes in,
So I think that what Troy's trying to suggest is that the EFMC might not be the ideal place to take this initial reaction to. I think that it needs to go. First off, I agree with everything you said. I think that one thing I want to question, though, is that you said that you suggested there's plenty of other whales, and so it's not going to be the doom and gloom that this letter from Friday Harbor suggests, but that there is still a real need to.
Right.
Okay, so I think that we all agree there's a need. I think what would be useful is to let Port of Friday Harbor understand that there's more people that have been doing research on this besides them, and we have a different tack, and perhaps maybe a conference call amongst the area ports that have this being a thing that they participate in, which is like, in our case, recreational and commercial fishing, that we could come to a conclusion that there's a better way to go. And I think that like what Troy said, what you suggested, the hatcheries of our state are running half. They've already got the infrastructure. All they need is a little bit of money for food. They've got the people running the facilities. They need money, and they need the political will to say, let's put more fish in these hatcheries. Here's the problem. That doesn't happen in the case of the Chinook. They don't come back as a big fish for 4 years. So that's why I would be personally inclined to go ahead and go along with this idea they have with the Fraser River fish, because it would get fish in immediately, starting right now with the next season. But I think that it's imperative that we don't approve anything like this without having it contingent upon having a corresponding increase in hatchery fish. And so I think that what we should do in response to this is not just say, oh, yeah, sure, we'll sign on. Say we have a get-together, a powwow on the telephone to say what our concerns are, and then send not just two ports, but perhaps all, like Port Angeles has an active fishery, Anacortes, Friday Harbor, us.
Bellingham?
Yeah. Get all these ports together to then send something so that, because the governor's task force is working on this right now, and I heard on the news last night they're not slated to give a recommendation until November, which is too far away. So if we were to get several ports together to say, to give some recommendations and have a recommendation be formulated by all of us, I think we could get that more quickly.
So it sounds like to me that you're saying that it's not that these pods of resident whales are going to die, they're just going to migrate out to the coast where the feeding is.
Well, that's occurred. That's what's happening right now. And so a lot of operators, whale watch operators, are saying, okay, so what's resident about the whales? What's right. native about the whales? They're actually spending a lot more. I mean, it's more an issue, if you think about it, it would be more an issue for British Columbia as a province in terms of determining do they want to save these animals than the state of Washington based on where these animals spend their time. So, I think the other thing to mention, Attorney Schmelk and I were talking about this, Kathy Pittis is commissioner in Port of Anacortes. She is on the governor's task force at the table representing ports in this. And seems to me all the ports that you mentioned all have whale watch operations going on. And so they should all come together through Kathy with a letter or something to the task force to say, you know, here's what we think should happen, possibly the 100% increase in hatchery. And I think that would have a lot of weight at that task force. And I've talked with her quite a bit this summer, and she's begging for content. She,
right.
Something like that would really go a long ways for her job as far as...
And to your point, the resident orcas are going out on Vancouver Island, but the difference is not just that they're live here in the Sound, the difference is they eat Chinook instead of seals. And so even though they're out there off of Vancouver Island, they're still starving because the salmon have dropped so precipitously. So we really need to enhance salmon because even if they go out there, they're still starving and dying. So.
But I mean, what it sounds like to me is that the fishery is declining.
Exactly.
And we need to do things that increase the fisheries survivability, which is increasing the hatchery output, in addition to guaranteeing or trying to get more spawning salmon back in your natural spawning.
It's a conundrum because the transient orcas eat seals, sea lions, and porpoise for the most part, and our humpbacks are eating actually krill that's actually increasing now in weight, tonnage weight between Dungeness and Victoria. So we're seeing whales increase, actually populations of whales are going up in other types because the food source is going up, more seal, more
to the warm water, more krill.
Right. And but then the conundrum is that you have this other group of whales, this other end of the whales eating salmon, that's all. Not learning to eat anything else to die.
But it's also endemic to the fact that we're eating salmon too, so there's two species that need to be assisted. So I would suggest then, in regard to this item, that we get together with, we direct staff to contact the other port directors, and we set up a conference call and just discuss this issue with the other affected ports and give a combined recommendation to the hand of the governor's task force.
And I mean, we could do this with PFSM as far as, you know, do the letter, but just maybe talk to Port of Friday Harbor and say we want 100% hatchery as well, but do the task force thing as well.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you should also, you know, I hate to say this, but like I brought up salmon hatcheries and fish, and I got, you know, people got really upset. There's a big difference between the hatchery fish, for example, that I was talking about, which is like we raise coho off Terminal 86. They go out there, there's 500,000 coho, they raise it to a certain point where the mortality goes way down. Then they get commercially caught, and they return back to that location, and that's like what they could do here with Chinook and or silvers. It isn't necessarily talking about hatchery fish for Atlantic, because a lot of people, I know, but I'm just saying like the hatchery fish, people confuse that you're promoting hatchery fish, which doesn't mean, because hatchery is used in all 50 states, I think. So, but they what they do is they want indigenous fish, not necessarily like Atlantic salmon. Right?
Yeah.
Some people don't know if they're not.
Costco.
You think they everybody's educated nowadays? They're really not. That's not what these are. But they actually help you commercially.
Yeah.
You know, kings do, coho do. They help you substantially commercially have a hatchery program. And that's why, one of the reasons why Prince William Sound has done so well economically for their salmon fisheries commercially, is they have the most robust hatchery program, Southeast tribe, and different species and that kind of thing. But the pink salmon has been pretty easy for those guys. That's one of the reasons why they're growing stock on the salmon vessels. Commercial vessels are so strong.
But they have hatcheries for pinks?
Big time.
Floating commercial vessels.
Yep.
Okay.
So just be clear then, directing staff to contact the other ports, see if we can set up a conference call and develop a joint letter, or at least a common letter that could be used to the governor's task force and potentially other entities.
You should get Kathy on that call too.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's the direction.
Good. So now we're to staff comments.
Our just staff comment that I have is that we've been working with internal staff as well as attorneys from Smolik, Sitka, and Davis, and they to develop a response to the Department of Ecology. So we have sent off a technical memo to them along with a letter asking for a meeting to follow up on our proposed actions for stormwater this coming fall. Sue's been working scheduled out. We don't quite have that on the calendar yet, but it should be coming up shortly. And I believe that we're very solid with having Smolik and crew on, that we have a good strategy moving forward. And so we'll keep you apprised of that. And but wanted to let you know that is moving forward, and we'll have a meeting here in the coming weeks.
So included in that strategy is the possibility of protecting us from third-party lawsuits?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
No comments.
No report.
Sue?
I know.
Frank? Evan?
No comment.
Nope. Abigail?
Well, I was just going to say, with all the open positions we have at the port right now, we were able to fill the hoist up 2 position, and we interviewed for that, and we promoted from within with a role satisfied with that promotion in-house. And then we filled that position, which was a hoist up 1 that was vacated, with another in-house promotion. So that was received well by staff, and I think, you know, people are pretty happy. So we're looking at, you know, filling then that vacancy and the yard labor position, and then there'll be one more that we'll probably
security,
have to.
Security.
And that's the next thing I was going to say.
Sorry.
Okay. We've done interviews for the facilities maintenance manager position. We're focusing on a debrief on that for a second interview. We also interviewed for the security officer position, and we're again prepared to make an offer. And I think by the end of the week we're going to have that filled, at least until they can come work for us. So it's going well in that area.
Thank you. Commissioner comments.
I had a lovely meeting with the Linger Longer Improvement Committee down in Quilcene on Monday night. Wide-ranging set of topics, including water system, septic system, a really strange, still mysterious little quill flow that happened in the middle of the night one night last month. People still trying to figure out. We talked
like out of the bank, or
nobody's quite sure where this flow came from, but the flow rate doubled at about 1:30 in the morning. So
out of the little quill river.
Yeah, and I guess it was a pretty pungent release, so they're not sure whether it was some sequestered water behind a backed up culvert that just cut loose, or a beaver dam, or who knows what. Exciting stuff, I have to tell you. They are interested in having when we have our CURB grant study kickoff. Having access to hear about that study, and I talked to Sam about that this morning, and that seems to be a good thing to do. They have some creosote poles down there creosote log pole segments that are adjacent to a parking lot they'd like to get rid of. And they want to know where their float ladder is.
Float ladder?
The float ladder, I guess. Larry took it to fix it and they want it back.
For the swimming club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Comments?
I haven't done either. So, let's see. The next public workshop is going to be Wednesday, August 22nd at 3 o'clock, with the next business meeting being the same day at 5:30 here at the Benedict Street building. And so now we're going to adjourn into an executive session for, according to RCW 42.30.110G, for the review of performance of a public employee. It's going to be an hour, and we'll check back in an hour, so that's 3:10. And so we're now adjourned.
With action or no action?
Oh, I'm sorry. Possible action afterwards. So we're